XRNLP, Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach.
This is Wes Geer, and this is Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host on KX93.5 FM. Happy to be here. And I always start off by telling you why we're here. We're here to talk about recovery, drug addiction, mental health, all that stuff. I'm a sober dude. Somehow I didn't die by some miracle. Mm-hmm. All my friends thought I was going to be dead, that's for sure. And so we live in this day and age where we're losing so many, and this show, or affected, everybody's been affected by these, you know, diseases. And so we're here to talk about it and share light and stories and hope. And when we shine light on the darkness, we find the way out. So I'm happy to be here. I have a very special guest this week. And by the way, got to plug my sponsor, New Vista Behavioral Health. If you're looking for a treatment program, there's a lot of shady ones out there. New Vista Behavioral Health is doing great work for the right reasons. If you're looking for help, please check them out. So each week, we interview different rad humans. We've had rock stars and celebrities and actors and pro surfers and all sorts of rad humans. And this week, we have a dear friend of mine and a rad human and an artist.
Am I?
Yeah.
You're okay.
You're an artist.
I'll take that.
You do the audio arts. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And, well, world famous K-Rock DJ, Megan Holliday.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Wes. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited you're here.
Hell yeah.
And I always thank guests for driving down here to Laguna.
It was a nice drive, actually. Yeah.
Right.
And I love Laguna. I would actually come here on like in the summers, and we would rent a house and we would vacation here. So I have a soft spot for Laguna Beach.
Oh,
I love it. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Spent a lot of time here. My uncle Max lives here. Yep. Yep. We'd go to Zinc Cafe a lot.
That's my spot.
Is it? Yeah.
I built Zinc Cafe. I buy so much dang avocado toast in that spot.
So good. Yeah. It's great. So I'm really excited to be here. This is going to be super fun. I always see you posting about Rock to Recovery.
Endlessly.
And I'm like, I wonder when I'm going to get that invite, you know?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you felt that way. Because I was like, okay, I'm going to ask her. No, I'm not ready.
Well, the time has come.
Yeah. And so what I was telling everybody at home is when I have people who I'm friends with on the show, which I'm friends with most of everybody, but some more than others, I get a sense of ease and comfort. Like, oh, they're my homie. And then like I told you this morning at 6 a.m., I woke up and I went, oh no, she's an actual radio DJ, and she's going to see me and know that I don't know how to run these damn knobs and all that. So
I had no idea how to run the board when I did my first show ever in San Francisco when I was doing my first on-air shift. I did not know how to run the board, and it just takes a lot of mistakes. It's making mistakes. And it's just being like, okay, I'm not going to do that on the next one.
Yeah.
You know?
Every week it's a new one.
Yeah.
For you watching or listening at home, you hear them all the time and you know you do. So thanks for letting me learn
on
the fly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it makes it more interesting.
Yeah. So let's get into your story. That's okay. What we kind of do. We like to do the like what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Where do you start your story?
Well, I was born and raised in Rancho Cucamonga, and, you know, I mean, I grew up, I had a great upbringing. I really, you know what I mean? Like neither of my parents are alcoholics. They're both incredible humans. I had everything that I could have ever wanted. You know, I never had to worry about anything. We went on vacations, like everything was great. I do think that around the time I was about 11 years old was when everything kind of came crashing down for me because my parents were getting a divorce, and then my little brother was hit by a truck by our neighbor who was a drunk driver.
How old was he?
He was 7 and I was 11, and I was there with him and I saw it happen, and it was very traumatic. And so
he lived?
He lived. Yes. Okay. Yes. He's a badass. He, but you know, it, good, like he's an amputee because of it. He was in the hospital for 3 months. It was just, wow, really, really rough. So I think after that time,
I saw it happen.
Yeah. So that was just like,
what happened? I got to get a visual.
Well, he was on his bike with our neighbor from across the street.
And it was a drunk driver.
A drunk driver. It was our neighbor. He was in a big,
it was your neighbor.
Mm-hmm. He was in a big pickup truck. And me and my dad were on like the bridle path, like the grass with the dogs. And then my brother and our neighbor were riding in the street, and it happened so fast. You know, and he hit my brother and he took off. And then I took off running home to tell, you know, get my mom.
Yeah.
I was screaming, you know, and running down the street. And so that was just really traumatic. And I think after that, like, I didn't really know how to say, I need help. I need, you know, I need therapy. I need something. And so when I sort of discovered alcohol at the age of, I would say about 13, you know, and I took my first drink, I think it was a wine cooler, you know, it was something really
California cooler.
It was like one
Bartles
of those.
And James.
Yeah, it was like one of those. But I drank it and I just remember feeling just a little buzz, a little bubbly,
tingly.
A little tingly. And I just thought, this is great. But it just progressed really, really fast after that. I immediately went to buying bottles of hard liquor, to, you know, just getting really, really, really drunk, like to where I was a blackout drinker almost immediately. So that's
like right at 13, you jumped
in. Yeah, it was like, I would say by the time I was 14, you know, I was taking shots, like many, many shots, and just blacking out and doing things that I would never, ever normally do if I was sober.
Do you think that you, if you look back, did you feel, because, you know, you were speaking to, my family was normal. They weren't addicts or alcoholics. Mm-hmm. You had this traumatic episode. But aside from that's kind of like outside stuff. What about internally? Did you feel okay as a kid? Did you feel all right?
No, I don't think I ever felt, it's the common story where I always felt uncomfortable in my own skin.
Yeah.
I always felt anxious. I always felt like I just felt separate from everybody. And I don't know if that's a common story for people who aren't alcoholics as well. Cause I kind of think just being a kid in general is just really weird and
really insecure.
Yeah, just very insecure. But I just always knew that I did not feel a part of, I never felt like, I never wanted to play sports because I didn't want to deal with any of it. I didn't want to deal with the competitive stuff, and I didn't want to deal with the rejection and the losing, and I didn't care enough. It was almost like I felt like I didn't know where I belonged or where I fit in or what I was even interested in. I always wanted to be like somebody else. Like I had a best friend, and she's still one of my best friends, and I always wanted to be like her.
Her name start with a B?
No, her name, it's a different friend.
Okay.
Yeah, my friend Lindsay, and who I, you know, I love dearly, and I see her still. And but I always wanted to look like her, and I wanted to dress like her, and I wanted my hair to be like her. And, you know, I didn't ever want to be me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think, you know, humans seem to have all the same attributes, but I think us alcoholics and addicts have them worse, or character defects, if you will. Right. I think a lot of kids probably struggle with feeling like they fit in or don't fit in, or where do they fit in? But you certainly hear in the circles of addiction how that same statement, I don't feel like I belong. And that's how I felt. It was a struggle.
Yeah.
Did you have problems connecting with people?
I did, but I think that when I, you know,
which is hard to believe.
Yeah, I think it's honestly, it's still this way where I have my core people.
Yeah.
I have my best friends and stuff like that. And Lindsay, I've known since I was 4 years old. So her and I were just immediately like click. So I always had her growing up as a best friend. But when it came to welcoming new people into my life, I think it was always harder for me to allow new people to really get in, you know, like I'm still like that too. People think that they know me, but they only know this one side, this one part, you know, I'm pretty guarded.
You only made it past the first gate.
Exactly.
There's a few more walls and then a moat and then a hill.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
And for me, even in current times, you know, speaking of recovery, I have 11 years, et cetera. You get used to operating where you're at, you're like, I'm doing good. I'm 11 years. I know all the stuff. I'm cool. I'm so, and you don't, you have these blind spots. So for me, I do that same thing. I operate, here's my friends, and I'll spend times where I get lonely at home and I'm isolating.
Yeah, me too.
And I have all these people I could call. And if I think of their name, no, nah.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, that's just kind of a trait. I mean, I think everybody does it, but I think we alkies do it more.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that I think the longer that I stay sober, the more that I just say, you know what, right now is a time where I really just need to be alone. And I think that I get recharged by being by myself.
That's an introvert.
Yeah, I would say I'm both. I'm somewhere in the middle where I can get recharged by being around other people, but I need to go home and I need to be by myself. I need solitude and I enjoy being by myself.
I don't know why I got a visual of you like crying. Like, oh,
no,
I'm just kidding.
I'm not a crier.
I need to be alone.
I'm not a crier.
Totally kidding.
But yeah, I think growing up feeling different and not knowing how to say, I need help. I'm not okay. I'm not okay. Because the family was falling apart, you know.
The family was falling apart.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we started off by saying my family life was normal. Tell me about this falling apart.
Well,
divorce type action?
Yeah, my parents got divorced. My stepdad came into the picture very early on. And
when did they get divorced? How old?
I was 11. It was literally
accident.
Yeah, they told us 2 weeks before the car accident that that they were going to get divorced. And then that's when, yeah, the accident happened. So it was very uncomfortable when my brother was in the hospital and we knew that they were going to get divorced and they hated each other. They didn't, you know, they didn't want to be
was
around
that
each
evident
other.
On the outside?
Oh, yeah.
Like they just...
I could feel it. And that's the thing is I've always been able to feel... sense things like energy. I'm very sensitive to that.
Empathic,
yeah.
I think a lot of us alkies are.
I think so too.
We're hypersensitive.
I think so too.
That's a big part of it.
Just feel too much. So
and we don't know how to interpret it.
Yeah. I don't know even what to do with it. I'm like, okay, I can interpret it sometimes, but then what? What do I do with it now? Okay, that's nice.
That's you a know, good point.
What do I do with it? So,
so at a time when you would need the stronger family unit because your brother's in the hospital for 3 months, you said, and you don't have that support system, plus you have the trauma, but then adding on that, they're splitting up, which is hard for any kid to take, especially at 11 when you can really feel or know, I don't like that. You know, maybe if you're three, you're like, huh, what? Give me my bottle. But I get that. So you have a lot going on. So do you remember so you had some feelings?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was angry. I was upset. I felt really sad that, you know, what had happened to my little brother and that he had to relearn how to walk with a prosthetic leg. And I mean, it was a really hard time and getting used to going from one parent's house to the other, you know, and just dealing with all of that, you know, my bubble was burst.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so for me, when I found alcohol, I was just...
How'd you find it? How'd that first drink happen?
I think I stole it from our cooler when we were on vacation in San Diego. And I think it was like my mom's wine cooler and I stole it and I drank it. And so I've always had those behaviors.
You were seeking.
Yeah. I was stealing cigarettes when I was younger. I was,
how
you know...
old?
Before that, so who knows.
And when you're young and you smoke, you get a head rush.
Yeah.
So it changes how you feel.
You get a head rush, you get nauseous, you want to throw up, but you're like, I want to do that again too, you know? So,
yeah.
So I was just always doing things that were pushing buttons and just behavioral issues. I took the car out when I was 14 and I got pulled over and, you know, it's like I've been just always doing things that you're not supposed to do. Always mischievous. And yeah.
So when, I just think it's noteworthy that you went and sought out to steal the booze. It seems like you were looking for a release.
Yeah, absolutely. I was definitely looking for a release. And then once I found that, I just felt like, okay, this is my ticket. This is all I've needed my whole life. This is what's going to, this is the missing ingredient. So
and you were by yourself when you drank that?
No, I was with someone else, but I honestly couldn't tell you who that was. I don't know. It was probably like some little like boy that was like a family friend or something. You know what I mean? Something like that. And then after that, we would get the alcohol from pulling hay misters you know.
We used to call that pimping. Hey,
okay.
Hey, mister,
yeah, we buy him some alcohol. I don't know who and these how- people were and why they would do this.
Yeah.
But they would do it, you
At
know?
The time, it seems like, why won't they just buy it
yeah,
for us?
I know,
but now
I know.
Looking back,
but
you're like, oh, you sick pig.
I would never.
For like a 15-year-old.
Absolutely not. I wouldn't even do it for my little brother.
Did you ever do it when you were like, when you were like 21, where you're like, I'm going to be the cool guy and I'll buy it for him.
Yeah. I mean, what I told my brother was, look, if you do it, I'll pick you up. I'll make sure, you know, I'll
if
drive
you do what,
everywhere.
Drink?
Yeah. Drink. Yeah. But then I did introduce him to smoking pot. I did do that. Mm. Yeah, I know. So yeah, which I, you know, inevitably with my story is booze was great and all. But then like when I found pot, that was when I was like,
next level.
I was like really? this is right here.
Well, pot you could do all the time.
And
by the way, we're talking about, like, you know, your brother got an accident, your parents got a divorce. I think it's important to point out for people listening at home, we don't I think people in recovery, we don't blame our entire usage on that. We're not like, it's your fault, mom and dad.
I don't blame it at all.
Exactly.
I believe I was born like this. Yeah.
But I like to point that out. But it's also at the same time relevant to our story.
Mm-hmm.
It helps push whatever we're going through.
Well, yeah. And I think when we tell our stories, if someone out there is listening, they're like, oh, I can relate to that. I remember my parents got divorced. It's just
me.
We tell these stories just so that someone who's listening that might need to get sober, they'll hear similarities
and they can relate.
And it's those little relations that make you feel attached and make you feel like, hey, you know what? I can get sober too, or I want to get sober. This person inspired me. We have a very similar story.
That's the thing people latch on to.
Yeah.
Right? A similar story. Or sometimes they're like, I can't relate.
Yeah.
I never did that.
Right.
I never did that. We love to find the differences. Right?
Yeah. You choose what you're going to look for, the similarities or the differences, you know?
Yeah. If you want to find a solution or not.
Right.
Okay, cool. So tell me about, this is fun. I always love this because I get, that was a very devious laugh. It's cool because in this digital age where everybody's in a hurry, the most you usually get from anybody is a couple lines of text. It's, you know, selfishly enjoyable for me to get to connect with people on this level and hear their story, you know, because I, you know, we hear it all the time. It's really our tragedies and challenges that really define us as a person in a big way. So tell me about this weed that you found.
So I would say I started smoking pot when I was about 16, and it was funny because my attitude before that was that I would never, ever try smoking pot. Pot was the devil, you know?
Okay, pot was like a drug.
I was afraid of it. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know anyone that did it. I had one friend that had tried it, and I was so mad at him for trying it. And then
where were you living at this time?
I was still growing up in Rancho Cucamonga. But I went to a private school. Oh. I was kind of more sheltered in some ways, but even when I went to public school for a couple of years, I didn't really notice anybody was smoking pot or anything. So then when I was in high school and some of my friends were doing that, I was ready to try it. I wanted to try it, and I did. And then I fell in love with that.
Life changing.
Cause you could be high anywhere, anytime. Yeah. I could go to school and be high. Food tasted better. Music mm-hmm. sounded better. Everything was just better, you know? So I was like, okay, alcohol, that's nice. But this right here is really where it's at. And
highly functional. It seems.
It's until it's not, you know? Yeah. But I really love smoking pot. And then it was like very shortly after that where it was, I hate to even say this because there was like, pot is a gateway drug, da, da, da. But it turned out to be that way for me because once I started smoking pot, I tried everything else by the time I was like 17, 18, 19. That was, you know, I tried most other substances.
I want to hear about this.
Yeah.
You know what we're going to do?
What?
We're going to throw in your song right now.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Okay,
all right.
So, well, let's. I'm going to try to be professional now. We're sitting here with Megan Holiday,
yes.
DJ of the world famous K-Rock, and
and Alt-1053 in San Francisco, if you
You're
care.
You're just worldwide.
I'm California-wide.
Oh, yeah, that's true. San Francisco's in the state. I was trying to get, but you know, I was trying to talk.
I like, but I appreciate it. It is the world famous K-Rock, so.
There,
like,
that's, you know, why.
That's why you said it. Yeah.
That's why. And digital media.
Yeah.
So we're talking to Megan Holiday about her journey through addiction. And so this is the song you chose.
Yeah. So I chose this Kurt Vile song. It's called I'm an Outlaw. And he says, I'm an outlaw on the brink of self-implosion, alone in a crowd on the corner, going nowhere slow. And I could just relate to that.
Going nowhere slow.
Going nowhere slow. And just alone in a crowd. That was how I always felt. I could be surrounded by so many people, but I just felt alone and I just felt scared. I'm an outlaw on the brink of imploding. I love his lyrics. I love Kurt Vile. If you don't know about Kurt Vile, you're about to know.
Yeah, so check it out. KX93.5 FM, Rock to Recovery Radio. We'll be right back.
Got wise blood to come with.
he says, so is the life of the outlaw. As a villain, as a snake-charming, vile human being, I'm an outlaw. And that's how I felt. I really wow. did. I felt like a vile human
Why
being.
Why did you feel vile?
Because
what did you do?
Well, by the time I was ready to get sober, I had done things that I was so ashamed of. I had my morals went out the window. You know, I stole, I lied, I cheated. I didn't have any regard for anybody.
Yeah.
So I just did whatever I wanted to do, whenever I wanted to do it, and you know, I had no relationships with my family anymore. I had been cut off. Nobody wanted anything to do with me anymore by the end of all of it. So I, you know, self-imploded, like what he talks about in the song. And I was disgusted with who I had become.
Did you make it through high school okay?
Yeah, I did.
Graduated?
I did. I graduated. I went to college in the Bay Area. And I was functional for a long time. I really was. I got really good grades in college.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Dominican University in Marin County,
okay,
North Bay.
Why is it called Dominican?
It's a private Catholic.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you were in private school, was that Catholic school as well?
High school was. I went to St. Lucie's in Glendora. Huh. That was a Catholic school. But I'm not Catholic, though. I'm not religious.
But, how'd you make it out of that?
I liked the school. I got a good education. Cool. I didn't have to wear makeup because it was all girls in high school, yeah, and you just wear a uniform. It was easy. But
there wasn't a bunch of chaos in there. I've heard a lot of crazy stories.
No.
No?
Mm-mm. I got mixed up with...
Remember the Chili Peppers song?
Which one?
It goes... Catholic schoolgirls rule. Schoolgirls rule. There's a reason they wrote that song.
I mean, I don't know. Definitely, we're probably wild, but I don't know if we're any more or less wild than the public school girls. I don't know. But
what was your using like when you're in college?
It was a lot, just kind of the same: drinking, smoking pot, and other substances. You know, I had definitely gotten into cocaine and stuff by the time I was 18 or 19, very heavily into it. And
that's pretty young. At the time, it doesn't seem young.
Yeah, but it's pretty young. And
I mean, 18, were you just doing it at parties, or
no,
is this like you're buying it?
I was not someone that was just doing anything at a party. Like, I was going and getting an 8-ball. It was at my house. Like, we were, you know, staying up all night doing.
Who were you living with? The mom?
My mom had kicked me out, and so I moved
at
in.
At what age?
17.
17?
So I moved in with my dad. Yeah.
Oh, hey. I had a similar thing like that. I got kicked out of high school, but anyhow, okay, went to move with dad. Yeah.
Yeah. And my dad is the best. He's such a sweet, good man, and I put him through hell. But he, you know, he worked a lot, and he.
What did he do?
He's an engineer.
Okay.
Yeah, he owns his own business.
So he's a smart brain.
Very smart and
very pragmatic.
Very pragmatic. Yeah. Yeah. And he, you know, he didn't want to see certain things. He didn't want to believe that his daughter was a drug addict.
Yeah.
You know? So he let a lot of things slide. He let a lot of things go that he probably should have said. No, but it was like no one could have. I really don't think anybody at that time could have told me to do anything and I would have done it.
So you're giving him that out, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Right. You would have done it one way or another.
I seriously think that my dad allowing me to party at the house, like not allowing me to, but just looking the other way.
Looking the other way.
Allowed me to not be in other places where I could have gone to jail or gotten in trouble or wrecked, you know, just ruined a life or something, you know. I mean, I don't know. That's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, I get it. But it does make me think about that concept of how many parents out there you could hold up a mirror with cocaine and go, your daughter, your son did this. And they'd be like, that's not there.
Yeah.
It can't be.
Right.
Not my Cindy
totally.
Or whatever.
Yeah, my dad always wanted to believe it was these other people that were coming over, that it was them and they were the problem and that was them,
right,
not me, you know.
And how, and again, we're not here to beat up your dad. It's just, I'm more comment, I think, to the blind eye of parenting, where if he has the engineer logical brain, right, her friends are coming over doing tons of blow or whatever, but she's not doing
yeah.
it. Not
yeah.
my little angel. Like, it yeah. just doesn't make sense.
Or it was like, they're the bad influences, you know? Yeah. They're like, even if I was doing it, it was, you know,
not your
it
fault.
Was not my, yeah, totally. So,
yeah.
So, you know, there was just a lot
it's good
of,
to talk about that stuff, yeah, though. Because, yeah. you know, parents here, too. And, you know, I don't know. I think they got to get a little more involved in their kid's life than just, you know, ask questions.
Well, and just, you know, my dad finally, these years later, just had to cut me off altogether and just say, I cannot. Like, he got to the place where he realized he was enabling, and he just cut me off. And that was the best thing.
So you went to move with him when you were 17?
I was 17.
And so you're going to college
and then
with him?
I went to Cal State San Bernardino for like a year and a half after college or after high school. And then I moved to the Bay Area. So I uh-huh. moved up there when I must have been 19.
And you were on
20,
your own?
And I was up north, you know, in the dorms the first year and then in my own apartment. And, you know, I moved up there and I pretty much realized that everything that I thought that I knew about myself and who I thought that I was none of those things. I know
like
that's
what?
I just,
what does that
I
mean?
Think that I had bought into a persona of who I thought I was from the group that I hung out with in high school and always having people over at my house and, you know, just thinking that I was this person.
That was your identity.
My identity, yeah.
You were the party hub.
I was, yeah. And then when I didn't have all those people around me anymore and I'm in a brand new place where I don't know anybody and I don't know anything, I just realized that I didn't know who I was and I didn't have an identity. And
that's a good point.
Yeah.
And I think that happens for different people in different ways.
Yeah.
Like for me, it was band guy days. You know, who am I now?
Yeah.
You know, who are you if you don't have that job as a stockbroker?
Yeah.
Who are you if you're not the cigar aficionado whiskey drinker?
Yeah. So moving up there and pretty much what I did was what I always do. And I found the people that had the pot and the whiskey and, you know, and created new friendships. And but I did, that was the first time I dealt with, you know, depression for reals, where I definitely fell into a deep depression and I didn't know what it was because I had never felt like that before.
Well, and, how was it manifesting? Like,
I couldn't get up out of bed. I was missing classes. I had never done that before. I had always been able to get up and go to my classes. And I remembered like one class I had to, you know, withdraw from it because I physically couldn't get up out of bed and go to class. And
so
I was just so sad. I was just so sad. And I didn't know why. And I gained a lot of weight and I was really depressed. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like the progression, right?
Yeah.
And you know, there's that so many of us can have success while we're still in a deadly addiction. But eventually the success will start waning.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
How long did that depression go on for? Because you made it through college.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, maybe 6 months, but, you know, it was, yeah. I remember I came home to see, like, my family and stuff and my friends, and somehow that trip home helped pull me out of it. I think I needed to see people that I knew again.
Well, and they say the opposite of addiction is connection.
Yeah, exactly. So I went back up. I finished school. I got good grades and all that, and I had to figure out, you know, what am I going to do with my life? So I had met somebody who worked at Live 105, which was a radio station in San Francisco. And I'm still at that station, but it's now called Alt 105.3. So I had met someone that worked at Live 105 and at their summer concert thing. I was high on mushrooms when I met this person. I was having a good old time. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of planted a seed in my brain. He kept asking, you know, like he just could tell I was a really big music fan. And he kept asking me to go and intern for their morning show. And I never realized that working in radio was something that you could actually do as a profession. Yeah. And so it planted a seed in my brain. But I didn't work at Live 105. I was like, I have to pass. I got to go to school, whatever. So when I graduated, I decided I was going to move to San Diego. I was dating someone in San Diego. And I was like, well, if I can get an internship at a radio station in San Diego, then I'll move there and then I can be with my boyfriend, you know? Mm. So that's what I did. I got an internship at 91X in San Diego.
Nice.
Yeah.
I didn't know that you were at
91X. Yeah. I was 21 and I was interning there and I was working as a waitress and I was living in Ocean Beach. And I one day had met my neighbor, really nice guy, you know, and I was like, I bet this guy knows where I could score some coke. You know, I bet he just
sure.
does. Yeah. He did. So we, you know, spend all night getting loaded and I'm high as a kite and I convince him that he should become coke dealer, you know, as you as you do. And
were you guys dating or just friends?
No, neighbor. I just met the guy. He was my neighbor. I didn't even know this guy, you know?
Yeah.
And so
I wish we could, don't you wish we had a tape of this conversation recording? I just want to hear how did it start? Like what was his first response and then how did it end? Like, okay, see your point.
I think I just somehow convinced him that it would be
very persuasive.
I'm very persuasive, very manipulative, you know? And so the next day I get up and I go over to his house and I see that he's weighing out all this coke.
The next day.
And
I
looked.
Was he in love with you or something? Was he just like, okay, baby, whatever you say.
I mean, who knows? Who the hell knows? But, he later on went to prison. He's out now.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So talk about wreckage of your past.
Is there any amends going to have in there?
No, I don't think so. I think people take responsibility for themselves with that stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like but maybe there needs to be a little, I don't know. Maybe that's a discussion I need to have with my sponsor. But, so
how big did he go in the deal? Sorry, how big did he go in the dealing?
I don't know because I didn't, when he got when he went to prison, I was already long gone. Honestly, I only lived in San Diego for a year and because what happened was I knew that that day when I went there, I knew my life was going to come crashing down because I can't stop once I get started. So I just knew, I said, this is going to be an unlimited supply for me and I'm going to either die or something's going to happen. So it was off to the races. There we go. So I immediately am just like, I'm barely holding on. I ended up getting fired from this internship because I couldn't go and get this simple piece of paper signed from the school, like, because it was for credits, you know, so I signed up at like a community college and I couldn't go get the paperwork signed because I was loaded all the time. So I got let go from the radio station.
Fired as an intern.
Yeah. And that's awesome. How lame is that?
That's really lame.
Yeah. So I pretty much just was getting loaded all
the
time.
Like, hey, you're working for free, but you're fired.
But how bad is that?
We'd rather not have your free labor.
Yes.
That's how bad you are.
That's how bad it was. And so I pretty much just, you know, I just got really into it. And one day I just could tell.
Got really into what? Cocaine.
Into the coke. I stood up one night. I had like mixed coke and ecstasy. And I stood up and I thought I was going to die. And I called my mom the next day and I told her, I need to come home. I have a problem. Like, da da da. Now, I was 21. That was when I was first introduced to 12-step recovery. Mm-hmm. And I got sober for about 60, 70 days. And in that short time, I decided I was going to move back to the Bay Area. I was going to get my master's degree. I was going to get my marriage and family therapist license. And I did that. I got accepted. And I was going to move up to the Bay. I was going to move to San Francisco. And I got a phone call from that guy that I had met from Live 105 saying, hey, I see you're moving back up to the Bay. Do you want to come, you know, work with me on this night show in San Francisco? I'm like, yeah, please. Yes.
Had you been studying broadcasting?
No.
No? Mm-hmm. Just a fan of music?
Yeah, just a fan of music. Most people who work in radio didn't study broadcasting. Yeah.
And yet there's all these people studying broadcasting.
But I studied psychology, and I think
a whammy on them?
No, I just think that studying psychology and people and how they tick and relatability and sociology, I think all of that stuff helps you in the long run with being able to speak to people and relate and understand them and ask questions and be a good interviewer. Mm. I think studying broadcasting is a waste of time. I'm sorry, but it's like, just go out and do it. You don't need a degree to do it. Just go do it.
Yeah. Somebody will hear this. Who wants to be like you and
exactly. Just go do it. You know? So I got my foot in the door there and I started out, you know, helping out on the night show, and then eventually just worked my way up. And I, you know, and I was going to school full time to get my master's, and I was just doing the most. I was going.
But
and
you weren't sober anymore.
I got a little bit of recovery. I got my stuff back, and I go, okay, well, maybe, you know what? I just need to stay away from the cocaine. I can drink. I can smoke weed. Those two things never did anything wrong to me, which is a lie.
Right.
And I convinced myself, as we do, we convince ourselves, you know, and I would do the whole thing. Like whenever I would have a bad night out drinking, I would convince myself, oh, it's just, I can't drink tequila.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I can't drink whiskey. I can drink beers. Like
I didn't eat.
Yeah, exactly. All the excuses. Yeah. So, but I was not going to stay sober. So
did your friends give you a hard time?
Sometimes. Yeah. But
my friends always single me out. Even band, I'd be on tour and they'd single me out.
Yeah.
Did you have friends at this
point?
Oh,
totally. But anyone that was going to do that to me, you were going to get the wrath. I would just,
dang.
Yeah, I was not going to hear it. But I do remember one time. A guy who I had been out partying with the night before, he had to drive my car home and he parked it. And I remember waking up the next day and not knowing where my car was. So I called him and I said, hey, where's my car parked? And he goes, Megan, I think you need to talk to somebody about your drinking. Mm. And that was a really demoralizing moment for me because he wasn't really a great friend. He wasn't a close friend, but he could see that I was not drinking like everybody else.
And
so
it
hit me. And so I went and I you know, did 12-step recovery again, got, you know, maybe 30 days, maybe. And then, no, I'm not doing it, you know, back out there again. And I was able to manage my career. I mean, I was, you know, on the air every day. I had this persona that I had, this great, incredible life. And, you know, and it started to progress really, really bad once I started getting into pills and opiates. That's when things really started to progress.
So it was another level.
It was another level.
It's always interesting to hear the progression, right?
Yep.
Because you said, well, when I found booze,
mm-hmm.
that was it.
Right.
And then you said, but when I found weed, that was really it.
Mm-hmm.
And then came,
Coke.
Well, cocaine. I mean, when I got the cocaine, then it was really on. And so now here you are at the height of your career thus far, right?
Yeah, thus far for sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was doing a morning show. You know, my own morning show with,
that's a
you know,
hard
the
thing
co-host
to do.
And I was, you know, really young. I mean, 25, maybe 20. Yeah.
Having a morning show and a party habit, if you will.
I mean, it was insane. One morning I had been up all night the night before. I tried to sleep for like a few hours.
What time
did
you start?
You'd have to be in the radio station by like 5 to go live at 6. So that's I probably tough. Got up like 4:30. I probably went to sleep at like 3. And I had been, I was on Xanax, Oxys, I was drinking, I was on Coke, like all of that. And I got up to go to work and I had slept in, obviously, and I got up to go and I was going to have a birthday party the next night. So my friend was in town. And so I got up and I started driving and I fell asleep at the wheel and I crashed into concrete on the Embarcadero.
Whoa.
And I didn't get a DUI because the firefighters knew who I was from the radio.
Whoa.
And I, you know, what the adrenaline can't, you know, you wouldn't have been able to tell, I guess, that I was messed up. I don't know. But it was just,
they
I
didn't
was,
want to tell.
I don't know.
What
I just,
time was it?
It was early. It was, you know, 5-something a.m. 5:15, 5:30 a.m.
Yeah, they could have thought you're, yeah.
I mean, the story I told them was so insane, but they didn't question it. Mm. And so.
How'd you feel though? Did you just go into denial
straight denial. I got to I couldn't wait to go to the hospital so that I could get Percocets, you know? And then I got out of the hospital and then I went and picked up a whole bunch of drugs for my party that night. I didn't even stop for
didn't
a second to think.
You.
I didn't even stop for a second to think I could have killed somebody. I could have killed myself. I totaled my car, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's none of that mattered. I didn't. It was like it didn't matter. I didn't even care. I didn't care. And so, you know, it just progressed and progressed until I finally one day I got fired from that job because I had made a really, really big mistake that I don't talk about publicly and I have made my amends for. And I, you know, I made a really big mistake and I got fired and I lost everything. I inevitably lost my home because I couldn't afford rent anymore, and all my money was going towards my drug habit anyways. By that time, I had switched over to heroin. You know, every single drug I said I would never do, I did. And so I, you know, I'm doing heroin. I'm in this horrible relationship. I don't have any contact with my family. You know, I'm going around to different check advanced places to get, I'm just borrowing money all over town, not paying back debts. I mean, just screwing up my life, taking out my 401k, you know, just.
Sounds a lot like my story. Just,
yeah,
I could totally relate.
Yeah. And just, you know, screwing everything up until I managed to kind of get myself together a little bit. I got a job at a winery, which is a great job for an alcoholic. I was working in Sonoma at a winery. Yeah. Yep. And then.
Well, that's not so bad.
Right. And then. Yeah.
So let's throw in your song here, and then we want to hit your. I want to know how I got
sober.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right. Tell me about this one.
This is one of my favorite bands. They're called Joy Wave.
I don't know them.
They're from Rochester, New York. I love them so much. They're one of my favorite bands, but this is actually them covering a Placebo song, which is Life's What You Make It. And it's just, that's it. It's, I realized that I had to pull myself up by my bootstraps. Like, no one else was going to get sober for me. I had to do the hard work. I had to surrender. And even now it's like, nothing's going to happen for you. You've got to go out there and live your life, and you've got to meet the universe halfway, because the universe wants to give you things. The universe is abundant, and it wants to provide for you, but you have to put in the groundwork and you've got to meet it halfway. So it's like, life is what you make it. You got to celebrate it, anticipate it. It's, you know, it's just, I just really, the song is just very powerful to me, and I love their cover of it. So yeah,
I love it. Awesome. I love that you love it.
I do.
Really? I do. So this is KX93.5 FM, and this is Joy Wave. We're here with Megan Holliday from K-Rock. We'll be right back.
What you make it? Can you?
Yeah. So that's Placebo remake of Life's What You Make It by Joywave from Rochester, New York.
Rochester.
From Rochester, New York. And this is KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM, Human Crafted Radio. I'm your host, Wes Gear. This is Rock to Recovery Radio. And we are talking to world famous K-Rock DJ Megan Holiday, telling us her story of, like, wow, if any of you at home were like, I listened to her show all the time. I didn't know that she was such a maniac when she was younger.
Oh, yeah.
So you're doing all the crazy things and the drugs kept progressing. And then now you're into heroin and you're working at a winery.
Yep.
How'd you hit bottom and how'd you get out?
I just got to this place. So then I was also doing speed, and the levels of paranoia were insane. One day I was just convinced that some people had come in, had walked out, did a costume change, and came back in, and it freaked me out.
In the winery?
In the winery. It freaked me out so much that I quit right then and there, and I never went back. And I called.
Wait.
Okay.
You quit winery or speed? Now see what we do. See, logic would say I quit speed. That was the last time I did it. You're like, nope. So I'm never going to that winery again.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's the insanity of it. I was out of my mind.
Alcoholic thinking.
I know. So I called my mom. I need to come home, you know. And I was in a really bad living scenario that was like, I was just like,
a dude.
I had gotten away from my relationship, kind of. And convinced him I need to move in with this person who was insane. And then I moved out from living with her, and I had someone come pick me up and put all my stuff in a minivan, whatever I could keep. And we just drove all the way down here so I could move in with my mom. And I went to rehab and I got sober and I went to sober living. But then I relapsed after that. Mm. And then a really good friend of mine overdosed and died. And that had a very, very, very big impact on me. And even though I had nothing to do with it and I wasn't with him, it just shook me up because I just thought, I'm next. I'm either going to die or I'm going to go to prison. Like, there was no doubt in my mind. So they weren't working anymore. The drugs weren't working. Nothing was making me feel better. I just felt horrible 100% of the time. And I was just so physically addicted. I needed help. So I had met someone that was sober, and they basically I could just tell they were kind of getting to a place with me where they weren't going to be able to hang out with me anymore. So he suggested that I go to, you know, the hospital and see if I could get into this like rehab scenario. And I ended up just going to that hospital and just saying, I want to kill myself, because I just wanted them to put me on a 3-day hold, which they did. And then they transferred me to another hospital because, you know, I had Medi-Cal, whatever. I was in the
I didn't even know they did that.
Yeah,
it's
I was
good
in a,
you knew that.
I was in a psych ward for 3 days.
Did you have a lot of suicidal ideation, or were you just faking?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't want to be alive.
Yeah.
But I didn't have any plans to carry that out.
Right.
I'm too much. I think I'm too much of a coward.
Same.
You know,
yeah.
But I definitely thought about it. So when I got out of that hospital, which was 2015 going into 2016, I spent New Year's in the psychiatric hospital. And
good time.
My friend picked me up. He had arranged for me to go to a sober living. I went into that sober living and I stayed in that sober living for 9 months.
Yeah.
And I am still sober today. When I was 60 days sober.
What's your sobriety date?
I had to reset it because I did sneak out of sober living one night to go get loaded. And then I
with
didn't
a boy?
Do it. No.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was a boy, but it wasn't like that.
Okay. Gotcha.
I'm not really that girl. I'm like guys are cool and all, but I'm not going to, I don't know. I'm just like, bring me drugs. That's like, I don't care about anything else, you know?
I appreciate your focus. Focus on the prize.
You know?
Yeah. I'm just wondering, because that takes a lot of people out. I was just talking to a girl earlier today, had a year, and the boy, like, you know.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to be my thing. I think my thing's going to be like having an attachment with the opposite sex. I think I am just so focused on what I do and what I'm doing, and I don't want anything to get in my way, and I don't want to settle. Everything has to be right for me. And so I think I'm so focused on everything having to be right that I might be missing opportunities. So yeah,
perfectionism.
And, yeah, definitely. So when I was 60 days sober, I got a text from the night show DJ of K-Rock at that time saying she needed to go on maternity leave. They were looking for somebody to fill in for her and that I should be that person. And I said, look, they're not going to hire me at K-Rock because it's the same parent company as Live 105. Mm. And she goes, just try. And I had met the music director at the time because of my days at 91X. I knew her husband from working there. So I knew her through him. And so I reached out to her. She brought me in. We had a meeting and I told her and the program director my whole story.
Whoa.
And I told them everything. And they were like, we're going to give you a tryout, you know? And so I did two tryouts at K-Rock and then they hired me to fill in for.
So many people wanted that job.
Oh my God. Insane. It found me. It found me. Wow. And I'm so grateful, you know? And then.
And you were sober.
And I was sober. And so my sobriety date is 1/13/16. And also, like, a year ago, a little over a year ago, I was reached out to by that station in San Francisco. And it's so funny because the first person when I got hired at K-Rock to reach out to me and congratulate me and say, like, you're going to be amazing was the guy who had to fire me in San Francisco, you know? Wow. But, yeah, so he, again, reached out a year ago and goes, hey, we want to bring you back on in the Bay. You know, you can do the show from L.A., blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, my God, I get to go back and awesome. I get to do it right this time. And I get to do it with integrity and honesty and with all of my faculties and my just being my true, authentic self, you know.
I love it.
Yeah. So it's been an incredible 3 years and some change. And I love my life today. Of course, there are moments that are hard, but
sure.
It's like that's life. And I'm willing to feel all of the things, you know, I'm willing to walk through the fear and the discomfort, but the relationships that I have today with my family are amazing and my friends, and I'm just able to suit up and show up in a way that I was never able to before. I couldn't even go in and get that paper signed to do my internship, you know?
Right.
And today I'm able to do those little things.
And then some.
And then
some. You just bought a house.
Right.
You have to sign a lot of things.
You got to sign a lot of papers for that. So, you know.
I love it too. And of course the relationships we were saying earlier, the opposite of addiction is connection. Mm-hmm. You get all those connections back. The connections what make us thrive. But the thing I couldn't help but thinking is for all those people out there, because I know how I thought, recovery's not cool. I mean, what's a cooler job than being a DJ at, you know, world famous K-Rock, the most influential station arguably in the world, you know what I mean? And you got that because of recovery. Recovery is cool. Not that it's all about being cool, but like, I know that's where our heads go.
Yeah.
So we're pretty much out of time.
Okay.
I'm so stoked that you came down.
Yeah, thank I love you, you so death. Much.
Great to hear a story. What's the key thing you would say to somebody out there struggling?
I think the main thing is just ask for help. Just admit to somebody that you know and trust that loves you that you have a problem and that you need help. And just know that you're going to be scared for a long time at first, and you're going to be and you're going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But that once you get past that part of it, you have a lot of help and support around you, your life is going to change forever and in ways that you would have never imagined. And if you just put your hand out, you'll be surprised at how many hands reach back out.
So eloquently put and beautiful. Yeah, you're not alone. So thanks for tuning in. This is Wes Geer on Rock to Recovery Radio. We're talking to Megan Holiday on KX 93.5 FM, and we're out of here.